Hello and welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. My brother is on vacation. Go! I'm joined today by the founder and editor of American Soccer Analysis, Harrison Crow. Harrison, how's it going?
Great, Jack. Great. I'm not the editor, though. I do want to make that correction.
Oh, no.
Drew Olson is the editor. He does pretty much all that work, every piece that you see that gets produced by and he also runs our Twitter account. So he's the clever person. I'm actually not clever. He's clever. I am not.
Oh, perfect. Well, then this next thing that I wrote also doesn't work, but I'm going to read it anyway.
Okay.
Today, we're going to be previewing the MLS season. I brought you on because, quite frankly, you're much smarter than I am. At least it would appear so. Not only can you do math, but along with the rest of the crew at American Soccer Analysis, you guys have been writing quick, insightful takes on the season ahead for each and every MLS team. Everyone should go read them right now. But before we really get into it, Harrison, can you tell us just who you support, why, what's your own history with soccer?
Yeah, good questions. So I grew up like a lot of people nowadays playing soccer. And after a couple years of playing, I went off and grew up and did my own thing. And I was a huge, huge Sonics fan of all things. And back in 2008, they moved away and broke my heart in a lot of different ways. And it coincided with MLS giving Seattle an expansion berth, which I'd kind of followed the Sounders in USL and before that in a lot of different iterations growing up, but it was always kind of at arm's reach. And I just happened to be in the military. I was deployed for the first time and the Sounders came into existence, and it kind of, in a lot of ways, just kind of struck home with me. Mm-hmm. And so I fell in love with missing home, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the Sounders kind of filled that void. At the same time, I was deployed with a lot of Brits, and that kind of was a good conversational starter. So,
man, your story is so much better than 90% of what I hear. It's like when you see someone wearing an Arsenal jersey, you're like, oh, when did you start supporting Arsenal? They're like, I watch every other game. I just think they're cool. You know, your story is actually kind of beautiful. You had a hole in your heart, and it sounds like not only was it filled, but your heart continued to grow with your passion for the Sounders.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, you know, I also played baseball in high school. So I have a lot of just baseball is very statistic driven. And as the early 2000, you know, century turned, a lot of analytics started coming up. Dave Cameron, who it was a Seattle Mariners blogger initially and helped kind of grow Fangraphs. It was somebody that I read obsessively, probably sounds bad.
No, not at all. We're all obsessed. It's okay.
Sure. So that's where a lot of that kind of came from. And then as I started following the Sounders in 2009 and 2010, I noticed that there was this huge hole in the game that I loved, and that I couldn't quite speak the same language as a lot of people. I felt like there was a lot of describing things were kind of cliche in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, soccer fans have a lot in common, one of those things being that we're all more or less nerds, and we're allowed to nerd out on other sports, but there really isn't that deep analytical repository of stats for soccer, not until you guys came along. Do you want to maybe explain just basically what kind of stats you guys look at and how they're more effective than other stats?
Yeah, I don't want to say necessarily they're more effective. I think that the object, at least with soccer statistics right now, it's all event data, right? So which means if something happened on the pitch that you see, most of the time you're going to be able to annotate it via events. Now, you can't take into effect, you know, all these other cursory facts, where defenders are, where these are all, you know, things that it is much more difficult to transcend and to document. But, you know, if something happens with the ball, whether it be a shot, whether it be a pass, we can start tracking that. So, you know, back in, I want to say 2013, a few of us got together that were actually all kind of from the baseball side of the house. And we said, well, we should be able to do some of this stuff with what MLS, you know, has provided us through the chalkboards. And so that just kind of has successively grown. We started, I think, Michael, that was about the time Michael Cayley started to introduce his expected goal model. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, Matthias Kulowatz, who does all the stuff on the back end for us, he actually was a mathematics professor at the University of Portland and said, hey, I can do that. That's really easy. This is what I need to do it. And so we got people, a whole bunch of people. We just kind of threw out a call, and it kind of was the start of ASA right there. We kind of grew into a think tank, and it just kind of was a bunch of people saying, well, we should do this. This is better than that. And it was a really cool experience, and that's kind of what we've just tried to maintain at our core. Instead of being this, instead of kind of being an enterprise, I know a lot of different, you look at StatsBomb. StatsBomb is a European version of basically us. They've kind of transcended that and started to consult, and I think a lot of people kind of go to that game, but our impetus has always been on the public side of the house and trying to get more people involved with this. There's a lot of really cool opportunities that are opening up within the game, and giving people open access to this stuff helps build that interest. And then not only does it build the interest, it also then helps pave the way for those future jobs and those future opportunities.
Do you see the MLS and soccer kind of going the way of baseball, and these stats being a bigger deal in kind of like back of the house and kind of like the management or technical staff side of things?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think you can see that already. Colorado has really changed the emphasis over the last 18 months. They completely changed out their entire coaching staff, front office, all in lieu of people that are business and analytically oriented. You know, that doesn't mean you don't get people that are soccer smart, but you just kind of you collect people that have experience with the game and also have experience within the business side of the house that can add value in different places. And soccer is so much bigger and more spread out than what baseball is. You're looking in a lot of different markets. So you can't send, you know, three scouts and expect to, you know, and send to South America and to expect to find everything. You need to know how to send those three scouts. You know, how can we do that better? How can we more efficiently navigate those markets? And I think you're seeing that, especially with teams like Atlanta that has a lot of, Tata Martino has a lot of those relationships. Well, how do we navigate? How do we leverage him in those relationships? Well, let's use data as a means of starting to, you know, narrow down that epic list that's, you know, Argentina, Chile, and, you know, all the different leagues that are down there.
Yeah, well, let's start talking about the season ahead with Atlanta. You guys, when you posted your Atlanta preview, it seems like you guys got a lot of feedback. it seemed like, you know, I saw a lot of people from, you know, Dirty South Soccer saying, fourth place, you got to be kidding me. Apart from Atlanta, with these previews, which ones have you gotten the most amount of kind of blowback from? Or maybe even just friendly feedback?
I think you get it. I think it doesn't matter what team it is, you're going to get feedback of some kind, whether it's direct emails, whether it's stuff on Twitter, whether it's Reddit. Reddit's usually pretty visceral, which is kind of fun. And look, you don't ever say anything the right way. There's tons of stuff. I remember I wrote the LA Galaxy preview, and I saw it on Reddit the other day, and I was like, oh, I'll read the comments, which is immediately the first mistake.
Why do you do that? Thank God. Yeah.
Right. And you know, that's going off in my head. Don't do this. But I think the other side of it is I like to think of myself, I can think things through pretty easily, but maybe I don't word things the right way. And I use it as kind of sadly, as a way of kind of getting a little bit better of portraying my ideals. But I think you kind of see, oh, maybe I didn't phrase this the way I should have or wanted to portray it the way I did. So, you know, and the Atlanta preview was actually written by Total Football, and the individual is an Atlanta fan, and he's extremely knowledgeable of where Atlanta is. He actually writes for Dirty South Soccer too, which is more ironic.
That's excellent.
So everybody has their own opinion. I think most of the time what we try to do is kind of strip our opinions and look at what are the high possibilities, what is probable, what is most likely going to happen, what are some of the pitfalls of building your team in the way that in the manner you did, which for Atlanta, I mean, they have a lot of they have a lot of holes on their defense, and then also centrally they have some deficiencies. Which will that stop them initially? No, but MLS is a long season, and you know, Jeff Lorenowitz is 35 years old. He can't continue doing what he's doing for 2,000 minutes at a time. It's just their wear and tear is going to degrade. Maybe not this season, but soon it's going to happen. And the question is, at what point in time do these players start breaking down, and does it have an impact on the season? And you know, I think what TF did was he just looked at it very logically and said, well, if this and this and this goes right, we're going to win MLS Cup. If they don't, we're going to have, you know, a really hard time. And somewhere in the middle is that truth.
Yeah, and I do think people are expecting instant chemistry, as they often do in sports with Atlanta. But I mean, especially with the potential for Almirón to be traded midseason, I'm all about the Atlanta hype train, and goodness, I mean, like, I'll get off the rails. I'll just let that hype train keep rolling. But I do fear. Are there other teams that you think have been maybe overhyped at the beginning of the season, or maybe are going to surprise you by failing to reach the sort of heights that they're projected to?
Yeah, LAFC is one that immediately jumps out to me. Like when you sent me the email, I was kind of thinking, I was like, oh, that's really an easy one, because LAFC has all of 19 people and they have no depth. and look, they have a lot of really good high end pieces, right? Carlos Vela is he's going to do a lot of really good things over the course of the year. Marco Urania is a really good striker, and I can't believe that they got him for free from San Jose. Laurent Simon, Walker Zimmerman. The fact that they got Walker Zimmerman for half of what the going rate is right now in Gammon Tam is a great, as they say overseas, a great piece of business. But there are a lot of holes out wide and centrally. Who's going to be that guy that sits in front of their defense if Walker Zimmerman and Laurent Simon, who are both very aggressive defenders, decide to start, you know, jumping attackers? Who's going to play behind them? Are those fullbacks going to be good about cutting inside? You know, Steven Bedeshore is a really great fullback, but if he's going to be going up forward, what's that defensive midfielder going to do? Who is that defense? Is that Omer Gabar, or who exactly is that? There's a lot of questions around them, and I don't know if they're quite ready for a full season. I think they're going to be really good at different stages of the season. I just think that they're probably on the outside looking in. There's a lot of really good, deep MLS teams this year, and it kind of changes. I think Atlanta came in at the right time and did the right things. I think LAFC had some things kind of go wrong in player acquisition. Not to say they did things wrong, but some teams didn't want to let go of the players that I think that they really put their heart and their soul into, which kind of fell through and kind of made, you know, player acquisition a little bit more difficult and rigorous than maybe what they expected, because they obviously have holes right now on that team.
Would you say LAFC is going to be sort of like on the playoff bubble, or do you see them below that? Because I think they make the Western Conference more difficult, obviously, but I'm curious to see what your take is.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely are going to make it more difficult. But, I mean, you got to think the back end of that, those 8, 7, 6, 5 spots, which are going to be, you know, possibly RSL, which – RSL has some amazing quality young depth. And then with that, you also have teams like Portland. Is Portland going to be a top tier team? I honestly think they have enough question marks to kind of push them back towards that end. LA Galaxy, are they going to take a step forward? You know, San Jose Earthquakes, they went and they spent money this year. They built, basically overhauled their roster in a lot of different ways with Mangus Erickson. They're going to give Tommy Thompson some actual minutes now. San Jose is a really interesting team. And So all of a sudden, those 8, 7, 6, 5 spots are a lot more. There's so much more volatility in them, and yeah, I think their LAFC is definitely going to make it more, more complex and more difficult. But with that, that work, that's a double-edged sword, right? It also makes things a little bit more difficult for LAFC in trying to break into those playoffs.
Yeah, I talked to Todd Saldana, the academy director at LAFC, and he was saying playoff run. But, you know, they pay him. So take that with a grain of salt.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's not that they have a bad team. They have a very good one. It's just shallow. Yeah. And so maybe by the middle part of the season, when they're needing those depth pieces, maybe they exist. Maybe it's a fascinating thing. We used to do this with our season previews back in 2014, 2015. I think we might have even done it in 2016, but we basically said, okay, here's the Western Conference. You guys predict it. And we put up a poll, and we put up a poll every year. And we probably got about 500 to 600 people to submit their ideas of how the league was going to finish. And it was usually just completely wrong. I think rarely did they get one right. Even in some cases, the majority had LA in the back half. I think there was a couple years where they thought LA was either going to be in the back half of the playoffs or even voted them out. Seattle on multiple times. And so what you kind of had is you have these inherent biases against LA, against Seattle, against Portland, because, you know, they're loud, they're obnoxious, they're, you know, these fans are kind of tenacious. And so I think there kind of comes with that some bias that's like, well, I'm not voting on who I think is going to happen. I'm voting on who I hope. So he kind of got out of that game. But I think it just kind of displayed to us and showed to us that it's a really big crapshoot. And I think that with Tam, you are starting to show some separation between teams such as like Toronto, NYC in the East, Seattle, and Sporting in the West. But I mean, there's still a lot of teams that have some floor and have some ceiling. So that just kind of throws that all into out of whack.
Yeah. So what are some of the teams that have that ceiling? What are some of the surprises, the happy surprises that we're going to see along the way, do you think?
So I kind of mentioned them already. RSL. I think RSL could very well end up being a top three team. I think for me, that back youth is kind of in question. I think that over on the East Coast, obviously you're probably going to have Orlando did a lot of shakeups. I think they're going to be a team. I actually think they're a better team than Atlanta personally. And judging from a lot of people that I've talked to, I'm not alone in that opinion.
I want that to be true. I don't care about either of those teams that much, but the trio of Clushton, Dwyer, and Miram, I just want to see that firing on all cylinders.
Well, and then you also have Jose Coleman that came that has a lot of, has a lot of hype. And maybe it's not Barco level, but, I think it's fair to wonder if he's not going to be on that same plane, at least initially. He might not have the ceiling that Ezequiel Barco has, but, I mean, certainly he probably has a floor that's very similar. So along with that, you're also adding Yuri Rosell, who it was fantastic for Sporting Kansas City, and the amount of events that he accumulated on the back half was more than Osvaldo Alonso, which I don't think a lot of people realize, like the amount of volume. He was a vacuum cleaner for that back half. There's a reason why Sporting took a step forward when he was there. They won MLS Cup, what, in 2014?
Oh, God. This is
against RSL, I think it was. But and I might be speaking completely wrong, but in any case, they've been a remarkable team, but they took a step forward and then they took a step back after they lost him because they just weren't quite immediately able to fill that spot in. And I think what he gives Orlando is going to really if he can come in and be that transcendent defensive midfielder again, Orlando is going to be very good. And I like Dom Dwyer a lot. I think what he I I feel like a lot of people get caught up in his personality on the field and maybe even off the field, that it colors their perception of him in a lot of ways. And even if you're staring on the field and you're for him, you know, Sporting Kansas City, a lot of people that I've talked to, they always say, well, I remember so many different misses. Well, that might very well be, you know, he might've missed some very easy opportunities and chances, but he created so many more. We kind of sometimes subconsciously dwell on the lower moments than what we really do on the higher moments.
I always thought he was very likable. I'm always sort of confused when people sort of speak illy of Mr. Dwyer, but I guess I kind of get it.
People do the same thing with Diego Chara. I love Diego Chara. I really do.
Bizarre. So you've got Orlando possibly overachieving, RSL as well. Anyone else? Any other shout-outs for biggest overachievers?
Dallas. I think it's really interesting. And Dallas could be either spectacularly great or spectacularly awful. And it's really interesting the fact that they pretty much – the only player that they really – out of their starting 11 that they swapped out was Walker Zimmerman, which we discussed on our podcast. It felt really odd that they – basically traded him and everybody was kind of cool with it. I thought like Zimmerman would kind of be the next piece. You'd swap out, you know, Hedges, trade him off, because, you know, Hedges is about 4 years older. I thought that just be the way that you'd handle. You're constantly rotating, right? You know, Walker Zimmerman, Matt Hedges, they have similar traits. I suppose, you know, Walker Zimmerman's probably not as commanding along those back lines, but they have very similar attributes in how they handle that, those defensive responsibilities. So to see Walker Zimmerman just basically shipped off and then they replaced him, it's kind of interesting. You know, Maxi Arruti caused some stir. There's a lot of dispute as to how much he really wanted out of Dallas, but you know, he was part of that reason why that they just absolutely epically collapsed in the second half. So I'm really interested to see how they figure that out. They had Matt Doyle on their podcast called it the most prolific collapse in MLS history. And, you know, I'm hard pressed to think of any better ones. So with that, I think that they were a really good team. The underlying numbers showed them very positively towards the top echelon of the league. And with that, they still lost games. So I don't know if that was just unlucky, if it was a reflection of what was going on in the locker room, or something in between, but I think they'll do better this year. I think they'll do very much better this year.
Yeah, it feels like there's more at stake with the second down year for Dallas than some other teams, because they sort of philosophically represent the play your kids mentality. They represent what so many people want the MLS to be, so that if they have two down years in a row, I feel like that hurts them more than, you know, if say like New England has two down years, or even like Sporting Kansas City, like suddenly we call into question everything that FC Dallas is sort of like, and their linked up thinking is about, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And yeah, there is more to philosophically, there is more at risk than New England, and New England's hardly an example of how anyone wants to run their organization.
What do you say about Brad Friedel?
Well, you know, Brad Friedel himself, I have no opinions about, because honestly, I don't know how much. I think initially a lot of me was to kind of mock the fact that, you know, Mike Burns hires his buddy to coach his team because, you know, this is really Mike Burns' last chance. But we don't really know how good Brad Friedel is at coaching. I don't know. And the most that I have to judge him on is his comments in watching him describe a game to me, which I wasn't a fan of a lot of his input. But that being said, maybe his coaching mentality comes out much better. This is a guy that went through UEFA, got all the badges. So, I mean, he has a pedigree of sorts. He might not have ever coached before, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that he helps Cody Cropper kind of up his game And
oh God.
I mean, because he was a huge disappointment last season, and I hope that he can keep Lin Wen happy. But I don't know. You know, I want the best for Brad Friedel because of the memories I have of him playing. But New England is a team that I do not begin to understand whatsoever.
Yeah, so pretty much we blame, I shouldn't say we, I blame Cody Cropper for New England not getting into the playoffs. I think that he, honestly, I think he's really, him and that defense wasn't that bad. Cody Cropper was just super terrible last year, and more so than any other keeper by our measurements. And it's funny, our resident goalkeeper expert, Bill Reno, had pointed this out beforehand. Like, I remember having conversations going into the season to where he just absolutely thought it was just a terrible move. He didn't like him at Southampton. And lo and behold, that prediction came true. And I think that you have to really hope that Brad Friedel fixes that. I don't think he's going to fix Lee Wynn. I think Lee Wynn wants out because the New England organization in and of itself is bad. I think I've not heard too many good things about them, although I will say that they are a forward-thinking organization because of who they've hired. They have a couple of really interesting back office guys that I really respect. But that being said, I think how they treat their players is more indicative of why he wants out and less about who's coaching the team. I think Jay Heaps probably wasn't deserved to be fired. That's my personal opinion. I know that's probably an unpopular one. I think if anything, you should have changed your back office before you changed Jay Heaps. I think that would be a more impactful move.
All right. How about I throw out some names and you just tell me what you think in a few words that the season holds for either this person or perhaps this organization. I'm kind of curious as your opinion over some things. And I know maybe, well, I'll just get into it. CJ Sapong.
I like.
Yes. More or less than, let's say, 15 goals.
I think it's really close. I think probably I'll go under, but like 14.
Nice, nice. I like hard predictions. I like it when people don't sort of say, "Well, I'd like to say 15, but who knows?" You know, sort of skirt the question.
I think it'll be under, but he's. I think it really depends upon if they end up signing a number 10. That being said, I think Adam Nam should probably be the number 10 for the team. I would love to see that. So.
Awesome. Next name is Chris Durkin.
I like.
Yes. What kind of season are you hoping for? Not even what you expect. What are you hoping for?
No, hoping for 700 to 1,000 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really, really ambitious, especially with how many people are in that back in that central midfield right now. But I would. That's what I would like to see. That's what I would like. All right. So what I would expect, probably 500 minutes, 400
gotcha.
Minutes.
Awesome. I mean, Montreal Impact. It's I love talking about the Impact. My family is French Canadian, and I love Montreal. I think Remy Gard. It fascinates me that he came to the MLS. So I'm curious as to what your opinion is of the Impact.
Yeah. So. I tweeted this out, which I'm really glad that most of Atlanta fans missed it. But Jason Vargas, I actually said I thought would have a better year than Ezekiel Barco.
Yeah, you said that in the email too, and I didn't quite know how to respond. It was just sort of like from your lips to the ears of God, you know, like.
I really like the fact that he's going to give the other side of the field something to worry about, right? Like it's not going to be, hey, we're going to sit 11 people. On Ignacio Piatti. You know, Dominic Kinnear last year, I was actually at the game to where he basically just had Nick Lima sit on Piatti the entire game. And it was so brilliant. He had Piatti. And then basically if Lima got forward at all, it was Victor Bernardes. And I think all game Piatti had 9 touches. And it just like all of a sudden the Impact couldn't function. In the slightest, like they couldn't get the ball to Piatti. Piatti couldn't do anything. It was the most brilliant move Dominic Kinnear has made in 5 years. And it was really interesting to watch unfold. And I think that's very I think that's really spot on right now. I think they kind of so they had to they have one player that kind of pushed himself back to Serie A, Gismelli, and then they went ahead and they brought another player back from Serie A, which they're kind of able to do because of their ownership structure. So I think that they've taken a step back, but I think they've also added parts. I think their defense is going to be so terrible this year. I really do. I don't think Evan Bush is I think he's a very average goalkeeper, and I think they weakened their defensive line immensely. So I think that team is going to be ravaged on the back end. But I think that they also, if they decide to play Anthony Jackson-Hummel full time and they have Jason Vargas, I think they could be a surprising team that just tries to outscore people. I don't know anything about Remy Gard. I really don't. I know he's a rather famous, you know, European coach. I don't watch a lot of European soccer. I just don't. It's really early in the morning. I'm on the Pacific side. So,
yeah, it's torture.
You know, it really is. And why? I have kids that wake me up at 6 o'clock in the morning anyways that I'm like, go back to bed.
Yeah.
So that's just where I want to be.
Yeah. I mean, every week we record this podcast and every week I edit out the part that I talk about Remy Gard. But so I'm going to do it. I'm going to say it again. And Remy, Remy Gard, when he was in Lyon, people called him Remy Guardiola. He did a really, really excellent job at Lyon. He developed a lot of young players, and all of the staff that he's brought over are also from his coaching days at Lyon, including their goalkeeper coach who developed Hugo Lloris, and I forget the goalie who's at Lyon right now, who's very good. But I sort of see him as this quiet, sort of French Tata Martino figure, in which he is going to use all of his connections and all of his sort of coaching know-how to attract young talent to the MLS, hopefully, in a best-case scenario. But we'll see. At least it'll be entertaining to watch them leaking goals and hopefully scoring some as well along the way. I'll give you one last name, and that is Tyler Adams.
I don't want to be like hype train Tyler Adams, but I definitely want to say,
no, man, get on board.
Dude, well, like, look, he's so positionally diverse. He just has an engine. He knows what his talents are. Watching him, I don't remember what play it was or what minute it was, but it was really fascinating. So there was a ball that was maybe that came loose. It was maybe 5 feet in front of him, and it had so much spin on it. He looked down at it, saw the spin, and ran back. Instead of chasing it, he ran back, got into position, cut off a passing lane, and the game slowed down. Like, instead of a counterattack, instead of him losing possession, he cut off the game. It was really brilliant. It was really thoughtful, and I was just like, yes, yep, this kid's amazing. Like, that, I wouldn't have done that at 18, 19 years old. No, I would have charged through someone, being the complete idiot that I was, and just tried to, you know, thinking I was way more skilled than what I am, and probably, if anything, put my team at a disadvantage. The best case scenario would have been a foul and it was stopped. And really, fouling is, I mean, you can get away with one or two, you know, negligent fouls, but that builds and that gets you into yellow card situations, which kind of tempers your enthusiasm or tempers your aggression. And with the way that New York likes to play with that upbeat, high tempo, high press, you can't have guys on yellows. That's partly why Philippe is so good, is because I don't know how he minimizes the amount of yellows that he does get. He really should have handfuls of yellows, and yet he somehow manages to play without it. And it's actually quite artful.
All right. Well, I just realized we haven't even talked about the team you love or potential champions. So let's just real quick. do you believe in the Sounders' chances this year? And who do you see in the final?
I've never I shouldn't say I never. Rarely do I pick the Sounders to be in the final because I actually don't think they're the best team in MLS or in the West. I perpetually love Sporting. I love how they build their team. I love how they have it. I could probably talk for an hour about how Sporting's set up. The Sounders have some really great pieces, obviously. I think they have the best player in MLS and Nicolas Ladero, and I'm not shy about stating that, regardless of if he played for my team or any other. He's just a transcendent figure on the pitch. He can either be the guy that finishes a shot, sets up a finish, or keeps the ball moving. He wins balls back. The guy does so much on the pitch that there's just not a way to really stop him. I mean, Vancouver tried in the first leg of the playoffs last year, and they still really probably should have come away with multiple goals. So I think Seattle's going to be really good again. That being said, Dempsey's another year older, you know, took about 9 months off after a heart situation. They have the oldest center back duo in MLS in Chad Marshall and Roman Torres, and they have nobody behind them. I mean, hopefully there are, of course, rumors that they're going to pick somebody up. They've been tied to a couple different people. But I mean, Tony Alfaro, we saw during the CCL, was very, I shouldn't even say inadequate. He was below average. A center back, and he can do a couple things that Brian Schmetzer likes with keeping the ball, playing long balls, and he's pretty decent in possession. But I think that they are a couple of bad domino falls from being a back end of the playoff team.
A couple injuries, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they lose Ladero, and I think that this team is immensely different, and I will say probably one of the worst teams in MLS. I think he's the differentiator for them. I think him and Roldan are what keep this team as good defensively as what they are. Obviously, with losing Osvaldo Alonso, they've kept ticking, and I think that's largely due to those two acquisitions.
All right, and so... Let's say everything goes right for Seattle. Do you see them in the finals, or who do you see?
If everything goes right, yeah, they'll be in the finals. I mean, that's everything went right, right? Will Bruin goes ahead, and he actually gets 2,500 minutes to prove that he can be that guy. Not that they're going to do that. Dempsey maintains some amount of fitness and plays 2,000 minutes, which I don't think he will. And Christian Roldan somehow continues to get better. I feel like he should at some time kind of plateau for even a short amount of time. That guy continues to get better. It's quite amazing. And you know, they continue to find bargain bin pieces like Nuhu, Gustav Svensson, both just kind of they picked up and played huge roles. Jovan Jones, who's no longer with the team, of course, he's over in Germany now, but he was huge for them. You know, who steps in? Is it going to be Sean Francis? I think Sean Francis is I think he's a lower echelon version of Jovan Jones that can't play forward. So I think this is a weaker Sounders team in some regards, but I think they still have that ceiling to get to an MLS Cup.
And who are they playing? Are they playing Toronto? Is that the obvious choice?
Yeah, that's a little obvious. I like NYC. I feel like Patrick Vieira and David Villa are eventually going to make that happen. I really think that it will be Toronto. I think Toronto is heads and above everybody else. That being said, the underlying numbers didn't think they were the best MLS team of all time. And I do think that's kind of interesting. And I think that there's a lot of it's really easy to say that they're the best MLS team because I don't think that there's been this amount of money in MLS or a team hasn't spent this amount of money in MLS before. So by that standard, yeah, they are the best team that's been ever been assembled in MLS. That being said, I don't think they're that much far and away from the rest of the league. I really like the fact that they're already going to a 4-4-2 diamond when teams are starting to still buy into the five back trend, which I think will definitely give them a tactical advantage. But yeah, I would go with NYC just to be you know, the other side of it.
Yeah, why not? Just to be a contrarian.
Yes, absolutely. Just to be a contrarian. Yeah.
I will always be a contrarian for Toronto, and I don't know why. Maybe it's the smugness of the combined smugness of Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore, but they, for some reason they are a very hard team for me to root for. So, but I won't get into it. I don't want to make any more enemies. I'll leave it there, Harrison. Thank you so much for coming on the show and digging through the new MLS season with us. We're all much smarter for it, and now we can pretend like we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, if I can, a real quick shout.
Yeah,
Matthias Kulawats has multiple things that are coming out. We actually have an interactive kind of app now on AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com website. You can go out there, you can play with a lot of different numbers. And with that, he's going to be adding to it periodically over the next year. We have a bunch of things coming down the pipe. I can't yet announce, but it's going to be really cool. And definitely keep a lookout for it. Keep coming back, because we're going to have new and more clever things being released.
Awesome. Go check it out. AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com.